And we're back once again. This is Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. I'm at the studio in downtown Waukesha. This is The Shah, WAUK 101 FM 540 AM, The Shah in Waukesha. We're talking this morning about this additional Supreme Court case coming up fairly soon. Could be this week, could be in the weeks just ahead, which the Supreme Court's going to be deciding the breadth, the scope of privacy rights in 2022. And I was doing a little bit of a history of where we got to this point, how we got to this notion of establishing privacy rights in our Constitution, chatting right before the break about Olmstead, a case in which the Supreme Court was wrestling with whether or not you have a privacy right in your conversations on the telephone way back in 1928. Believe it or not, the Supreme Court at that point in a case was subsequently overruled, rejected, and overturned. The Supreme Court in Olmstead found that you did not have a privacy right. But along the way, in Olmstead, a fellow named Louis Brandeis, an icon, a lion of the Supreme Court, wrote a dissent. And it's important to listen to this because it really is one of the great articulations of privacy rights that remains good law, as he describes it, even though he was in the dissent in Olmstead in a case called Katz overruling that. His view became the majority view of the United States Supreme Court. This is what Louis Brandeis, Justice Louis Brandeis, said. He said, "The makers of our Constitution understood the need to secure conditions favorable to the pursuit of happiness, and the protections guaranteed by this are much broader in scope," he wrote, "and include the right to life and to an inviolate personality, the right to be left alone," that great language that we think about an awful lot when we consider rights to privacy. "This most comprehensive of rights, the right most valued by civilized man," and again, I would offer women as well. And so he went on, subject to understanding of the place that this comes from in Olmstead, his dissent in Olmstead, to say the principle underlying the Fourth and Fifth Amendments is protection against invasions of the sanctities of a man's or woman's home and privacies of life. This is a recognition, Brandeis said, of the significance of one's spiritual nature, his or her feelings, and his or her intellect. Again, a dissent in Olmstead way back in 1928. And that leads to the groundwork for one of the seminal cases that brings us current. It's a case called Griswold versus Connecticut. It's 1965, so we jump ahead a couple of decades here. 1965, and the Supreme Court once again has before it a question of whether there is privacy under the Constitution. What is the dimension of that? How does this come about? Well, way back in 1961, two good troublemakers, I would offer, named Estelle Griswold and Lee Buxton. Estelle Griswold is the executive director of Planned Parenthood in Connecticut, and Lee Buxton is Dr. Lee Buxton. He's the chair of the Yale Medical School's Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology. They opened their doors to a new reproductive services clinic in New Haven, Connecticut. And they knew when they did that in November of 1961 that they were going to run afoul of something called the Comstock Law. Not only in Connecticut, but many other states in the Union, a Comstock Law that prohibits any person, here's the language from that law, from using a drug, medicinal article, or instrument for the purpose of preventing conception. If you violate that law, you can be arrested. You can be fined up to $100 for each violation. You can be tried, convicted, and sure enough, Estelle Griswold and Lee Buxton, within hours, probably days, they find themselves before the state court in violation of the Comstock Law for opening their clinic. And as a result of what they do, in fact, say that morning, they are convicted by the court in Connecticut for violating that law. Goes up to the Supreme Court, and the question is whether or not that conviction that is affirmed by the state Supreme Court as well can stand. And the Supreme Court, for the first time, says to us that, yes, indeed, there is a privacy right in the Constitution. William Douglas, another lion in the area of civil rights, human rights in America, writes for a 7-2 majority in Griswold versus Connecticut. Griswold is the name of the case. He says this: "Our previous cases, including things like the other cases out of the 1920s that we just discussed, suggests that specific guarantees in the Bill of Rights have penumbras. There's your word for this morning, for this afternoon, for the day. Penumbras, formed by emanations from those guarantees that help give them life and substance. Various guarantees, he says, create zones of privacy. That's what William Douglas says, writing on behalf of a majority of the Supreme Court at that time. He goes on to say, we have had many controversies over these penumbral rights of privacy and repose. These cases bear witness that the right of privacy, which presses for a recognition here, is in fact a legitimate one. And so we get in 1965, the first clear articulation, again, hints back in the 1920s and certainly other cases that this existed. Supreme Court tells us in 1965 there is a constitutional right to privacy in this case called Griswold, this very important opinion written by Justice Douglas at that time, and it sets the stage for everything else that follows. Now, we know based upon not only Mark's very good call this morning already, that there are differences in opinion coming right out of Griswold about where that comes from. Where does the word privacy come from? Well, it's not, as I said, in the Constitution language itself, but we know that Supreme Court justices find it in various areas. We know, for example, again, I just read the penumbra language, if you will, from Justice Douglas that a majority pretty much signs on to. But there are other notions behind this as well, and so you get, for example, Justice Harlan, who says, who concurs in the overall opinion, but says that you find that in the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. That's where he finds privacy. Justice Goldberg at the time finds it, Mark, in the Ninth Amendment, as you just indicated earlier today, establishing that simply because the Constitution explicitly describes certain rights, that doesn't mean that others do not exist, and that's sufficient authority, according to Goldberg. Byron White took an even more traditional, accessible, kind of rational basis approach, and he says, I wholly fail to see how the ban on the use of contraceptives by married couples in any way reinforces the state's ban on illicit sexual relationships. And so, despite these differences internally about where this privacy right comes from, virtually all of the justices, at least seven of them back in 1965, say, yes, indeed, it exists. This zone of privacy that Justice Douglas talked about is out there. And it gives rise, then, to a whole series of cases that follow. And let me do just a little bit of exposition of that, and I'm going to take some callers right after this before we head into Roe versus Wade in particular. Based upon this constitutionally-based right to privacy that is now acknowledged in Griswold, all sorts of other things happen both before and after Roe versus Wade. And so, for example, we had a caller was calling in over the break. Appreciate very much Chuck from Madison asking about medical treatment and even rights to suicide, those kinds of things. Well, it turns out that in 1990, using this privacy right, the United States Supreme Court said that the capacity to terminate life-prolonging medical treatments and healthcare generally, decisions about healthcare and the ways that we move forward in our lives and perhaps even end our lives, those are protected under privacy rights. All right, that's 1990. Go back a little bit. 1972, the ruling in Griswold is expanded to provide access to contraceptives for unmarried couples. Griswold just applied to married couples, believe it or not. That was 1972. Juveniles, their privacy right, access to contraceptives, that's in 1977, got to be at least 16 years of age. That's expanded in 1977. Let's jump around here a little bit. Also in 1977, the prerogatives of families to decide how they define their households. There was a grandmother who had identified her household as being one in which her grandchildren were present. And the Supreme Court said, you can't intrude in that decision. The decision about how households are going to be put together, that also a part of a privacy right protection, penumbras and other protections in the Supreme Court. 1967, many of you recall this case, the rights of interracial couples to marry. That was 1967, a case most appropriately called Loving versus Virginia. The Loving couple, quite literally, that is their last name. Right for interracial couples to marry, 1967. 2015, we all know in Obergefell, the United States Supreme Court said the right of same-sex couples to marry. That's a privacy right coming out of 2015. 1969, the Supreme Court says your right to private possession of pornography depicting adults over the age of 18, so some limitations there. That is also a privacy right that you have. And significantly also the freedom of adults to engage in consensual sexual activities in their homes. 2003, that is a privacy right as well. There are literally tens, if not hundreds of these out there that all flow from Griswold and the identification of privacy rights that comes out of 1965. And we march on toward, ultimately, Roe versus Wade in 1973, which we're going to get to in just a moment or so. But I'm going to take a couple of callers. Connor has brought them on the line. First, we've got CJ from Skokie. CJ, thank you for waiting on me and waiting on us. Your comments, your thoughts this morning.
My call. I believe the Democrats proved they were weak on crime. They're now recalling DAs from even San Francisco and Los Angeles. And your party, James, picks and chooses which laws are enforced. Is it okay to protest Supreme Court justices in front of their house? No, it's against the law. Your party is allows it.
CJ, I'm going to interrupt you just a little bit here, just because, you know, our program here, I know we've just been on the air for a couple of times here. I'd like to set forth this notion that, you know, it's not about partisan politics. Law enforcement, as you and I have talked before, should in fact be something that is apolitical and nonpartisan. And certainly the issues related. And as we talked this morning, about constitutional rights under Roe versus Wade, under the Constitution, privacy rights. We're going to talk about more in the second hour. All those things, the understanding here this morning, CJ, the point this morning.